our colleagues, Sam Thompson, who, if you saw him, you'd sort of right away assume he was a hippie.
Get up off your ass and get up on the podcast! Rich Police Radio! Rich Police Radio! Rich Police Radio! Rich Police Radio! Get up off your ass and get up on the podcast! Rich Police Radio!
Hey, welcome to Rich Police Radio. I'm here with a returning guest. You've been on the show three or four times now, I think, and it's always a pleasure to have you back. I mean, you know, you're someone who not only is heavily involved in the local music scene, but also on the radio end as well. And you've been sort of very active on both fronts for a long time. So I think the best way to start this off is if you want to introduce yourself and give a bit of background about who you are as an artist.
I'm Sean Burns. I think this is my fourth time here with you.
I think it might be. Yeah. Fourth or fifth.
Yeah, and about 6 years, local country music singer, host of the Boots and Saddle Show. Our home base is on CKUW 95.9 FM, though we are syndicated across Canada into the United States these days. But yeah. Winnipeg is home. My real job is playing bass for a fellow named Corb Lund out of Alberta. And when we're not doing that, then I get to do my own thing with my band, Lost Country. And that's why we're here today.
For sure. And I mean, you know, the timing, I find that every time I talk to you, we sort of time this around a new release that's coming out. And that's the case here as well with a new Sean Burns, Lost Country record. Maybe if before we get into that, though, the Corb Lund thing, how long has that been going on? Because just following you on social media over the past number of years, it seems like you're doing a lot of touring with that group. I mean, you seem like very, very active as the bassist for Corb.
Yeah, when we're on the road, like when we're going hard. And it's typically between 4 to 6 months out of a year, we're gone. And I've been in the band for nearly 5 years now.
Okay.
So there's been some heavy years and there's been some light years. But, you know, on the light years where we're not touring, you know, when we made a record and this fall, we're rehearsing a bunch every month. So he keeps us really busy. And when we go on the road, we tour hard for, you know, 3 to 5 weeks at a time, six nights a week.
Yeah.
And we drive hard on the seventh day. It's a real hardcore touring gig.
Well, I guess the reason that I ask that too is because, I mean, you are, you know, as we've established here, you have a new record coming out. You're sort of, you know, fairly prolific in terms of your own output. Meanwhile, you have this day job where you're touring with someone else's band. How do you find the time to, not only record this and play shows as yourself with your band, but also even just write these songs? I mean, you're on the road a lot, like you said. When do you fit the Sean Burns stuff in to your busy Corb Lund schedule?
Well, I mean, I guess it's a good thing and sometimes a tough thing, but everyone in my band here in town is real. They're all really busy musicians with other groups. And so a real benefit of the Corb Lund gig is that I know usually 6 to 12 months ahead of time when I'm going to be around. So then I can kind of block those times and tell everyone, you know, we're going to work a bunch in November or December. And, you know, this record comes out on September 18th and we recorded it the first few days of October last year.
Okay. So it's okay.
You know, yeah. So it's like when you got time and, you know, not to rush through things like mixing and design work and stuff like that. So it's kind of like, here's my windows. And, you know, we typically never work with Corb in September. So September's a release, September's a tour. So it's luckily I know pretty far ahead with him. But and as far as writing goes, like about half of the songs I'd had kind of written or mostly written for of quite a few years, actually.
Okay.
It was just a matter of massaging them with the band to get them to where they are now. And then the other ones, like I can't really write when I'm on a tour, a solo tour or a band tour where I'm, you know, handling all the logistics and everything. But when I'm in with Corb, you know, sometimes there's a lot of time in the van. There's a lot of time, you know, hotels. So I got some work done touring with him in pieces, you know.
Sure.
Never like a full song in one shot. But for the first time, it was like, you know, maybe over the course of a year, I hammered through one of them that I started in a hotel somewhere. So, yeah, I just kind of find time, you know. I always have a guitar in the van with him. I bring it into the room with me. And it's tough at home, you know. Like, I've got a small child.
For sure.
All the like regular people stuff going on here too, and then I'm gigging. So yeah, it's tough. But you know, like I don't write a ton, but when it happens, like when I feel like it's happening, I'm very conscious of trying to, you know, receive it.
For sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I don't want to dwell too much on the on your day job here, but I mean, has this experience, I don't think I've asked you this before, has this experience of being a sideman basically for Corb for all these years now, has that influenced your own stuff? Just because you're out every night playing someone else's songs, I would imagine that's going to seep into your own material, whether you want it to or not.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, there's a high expectation of everyone in that band, of each other and of ourselves. So it's hard not to, like, you got to kind of bring that back home with me. It's like, you know, we play so often with Corb that, you know, we can run through 100 songs and we know them and we know all the parts. Like, we don't play as often with our band at home. So it's fewer songs. I have to remind myself, you know, of the limitations. But it's also taught me a lot about, you know, structuring set lists and arrangements, sure, and communicating what you want as the band leader to your people, and, you know, just being direct and being polite, but being direct. And I've learned a lot of that from him. You know, he's been doing it for a long time, and to do all those things, like, respectfully, we're all friends, you know, but sometimes I want something different, and
for sure,
you don't have to agree with it, you know, but let's just try it. So,
for sure. Yeah,
but also,
yeah,
like, you know, he's good about, and I try to be as well, about input from the other people in the band. Like, what do you think? You know, I don't play the fiddle. Like, what would you do? You know? So yeah. So it's, I've kind of learned a lot about those things. I mean, it's growing up too, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And so when I heard you had a new record coming out, I had this idea in my head of what a Sean Burns record sounds like. And having, you know, heard some of these songs before the record comes out, it sounds like a Sean Burns record. And I mean that in the best possible way. Like, I mean, the idea that I have of your music is a positive one, but there's definitely a style that you have, right? And I mean, so what sort of keeps you doing that Sean Burns sound, however you want to define that? Like, 'cause I mean, because there's definitely a through line, even though there's, you know, there's changes from record to record in terms of, you know, maybe some influences and some different styles are coming in here and there, but you have a sound, whatever you want to call that. And I'm sure you have a way of defining it just because of your sort of deep knowledge of country music lore, I guess, maybe is a way to put it. But do you, what is that sort of ongoing thing in your sound that makes it a Sean Burns record, if that makes sense?
Well, I'm on this sort of ongoing pursuit of understanding and respecting traditional country music and all the records. I'm really glad you said that, by the way, because sometimes I'm like, are these two different from one another? But you're so close to, you know, we all these sort of subgenres of country music that we've touched on with Bakersfield or the truckin' stuff, or, you know, like hardcore barroom honky tonk.
Yeah.
And this record here is sort of modeled after the Texas dance hall thing, where it's all about dancing. It's all about, you know, fiddles and pedal steel guitar. And it's just sort of another little faction of country music that I'm very interested in and passionate about. And that's sort of where the band has been leaning for the last couple of years. And as far as, I don't know, I've been working over the last few years to try to make sure the records don't sound too different from the live show. Because I've had a lot of people in the early days say, you know, you sing so much better live than on your records. You
yeah,
know,
yeah,
I was like,
yeah,
well, shit, you know. So trying to, you know, do like a comfortable sort of loose organic vocal performance in the studio, that so that, you know, it's not night and day, you know. And I think I've been able to do that in the last few years. And maybe that contributes to it being a sort of a uniform thing. But I'm glad, you know, we've had member changes, we've had style changes, and to have it all sort of still feel like it's under the banner of Sean Burns and Lost Country, that means a lot. So thank you.
Yeah, well, I think it does. I mean, like, when I turn it on, I was not that I'm going to be disappointed. I like what you do. I wasn't expecting to be like, oh, this sucks, but it was like, oh, this is what I want from a Sean Burns record, you know what I mean? It has all of the sort of hallmarks of what your sound is.
Don't take much until I start to moan. I don't know where I belong. I do my crying alone. Out on the street, in the front seat, when I turn on my radio. Memories, watching you leave for the neon signs behind the swinging doors. I do my crying alone. It don't take much until I start to moan. I don't know where I belong. I do my crying and try to do what's right while living with all the things that I've done wrong. They're all in the past, and now I hold this empty glass. But I could have missed it all. I do my crying. Don't take much until I start to moan. I don't know where I belong. I do my crying. I do my crying. And I do my crying alone.
Based on what you just said about the sort of very inside baseball kind of subgenres of subgenres that you're dealing with, I mean, I'm sure you record these records knowing that the average listener is probably not going to have that depth of history and of knowledge. So, I mean, how do you make these things that are incredibly dialed into something super specific, but then also give them universality, right? Because you want people who like country music sort of writ large to appreciate what you're doing, but then you also have these, I mean, it's not Easter eggs, but you have enough of the sort of focus on individual scenes and sounds and historical eras and sub-styles and things like that, that someone who is a nerd about it and is very deep into the history will appreciate too.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of little nuanced things on the record that you know, only people super familiar with the style will catch, and that's great. Like, that's what I love to hear when I'm listening to records. But people, you know, the influences and their real inside stuff. It's yeah. Like, you know, but I don't know. I try to make it sound like entertaining. You know, I want it to be entertaining across the board. Something that our band has been able to do is people will come in off the street, if they're walking into the club and see us, and they might not necessarily like country music, but they'll usually, you know, stick around because sure. It is entertaining and it's a band that knows the assignment. And, you know, to try to have some lyrical content with these real kind of old style songs, some sort of contemporary language or themes. I mean, all these central themes to country music are ones that we revisit. They're, you know, they're breakups, they're drinking, they're dancing, they're whatever, you know, the nightlife. But, you know, to sort of twist that into some, you know, relatable stuff. And then I had someone recently tell me that he thought the record was a real personal record.
Okay.
And I thought I was kind of surprised because I thought I was, you know, fooling everyone. And then I listened to some of it's like, yeah, some of these things are real. Some of these feelings are real. They're universal.
Yeah.
That stuff will catch on. And then some of them are actual stories. Like, there's a couple there that are true stories. You know, the song, the second single, Tables and Chairs, is literally about, you know, playing in a bar to nobody, to yeah. The tables and chairs. And it's like, so, you know, things like that brings it into a modern thing and sort of reflective on the experience that we've had over the years.
Is it difficult to do that kind of personal storytelling when you're also trying to fit a style? I mean, I obviously this is naturally what comes out of you for sure, just mm-hmm. based on your years of doing this. But I mean, you know, when you're doing something like, I know it's been a few years now, but say the Trucking album, right? I mean, if you're doing something in that specific style and you want to say something that's maybe more personal to you, do you have to balance the two aspects of trying to get the sound sort of right for the era you're representing and then also sort of deliver that personal story or song?
No, I think, you know, if it's done well, it's done right. You know, there's only so many songs to be written. There's so many subjects to be covered. And all of us are covering the same few.
Yeah.
You're just kind of like masking it in whatever it is, whether, you know, you're an indie rock band singing about heartbreak or you're a country singer. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's all the same life, you know,
sure.
that we're doing. And so I think if the lyrics are strong enough and you understand your assignment musically, that you can make it work, you know, no matter what you're doing. And the Trucking stuff is the Trucking stuff. It's like, those are all real specific.
Yeah. That maybe wasn't the best example, but maybe.
There is a couple on that record that we found that are like kind of more of the tender side of trucking, you know, a bit of a love song, you know, but you're longing for home. And so again, these are just like things that people go through in their lives and it, you know, you doll it up with the truck driving thing. It works with this. It's like, you know, you got twin fiddles and a steel guitar and a shuffle and people want to dance. And if they want to listen to the lyrics, then there's something in there that maybe they could relate to or they might laugh at, you know? And I think, you know, if we just, you're just paying attention to detail, really.
Yeah.
It's just me and those tables and chairs. It's taken me a lifetime to get right here. It might be a lifetime till I come home, my dear. I'll come home empty-handed to this empty, lonesome place. Life gets long without you, and I know I've been replaced. I still change my clothes and I'll wash my hair. The lights shine bright, the stage is set, the bartender prepares. I'm wondering whatever brought me there. It's just me and those tables and chairs. The door swings open, there's company. She just passing by here or sitting down for me. It's calling in the question. Now it's all become so clear that empty rooms and empty hearts, you find them everywhere. I still change my clothes and I'll wash my hair. The lights shine bright, the stage is set, the bartender's well prepared. For fame and fortune, I don't even have a prayer. It's just me and those tables and chairs.
Do you still find, I mean, I think I know the answer to this already, but yeah, as someone who listens to very heavy amounts of country music, I mean, obviously just doing your radio show, you know, every episode of that, you have to dig pretty deep through, you know, your collection or wherever else you're getting this stuff from. Do you ever, I mean, there's no end to this. Obviously, country music has existed for decades. There's so much of it from around the world now, but does it ever get old to you? Do you ever find is there ever a point where country music in general is something that you feel like you want to try to experiment away from? Like, is there ever, not that this is going to be a Sean Burns metal album, but you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, are you like still as dialed into this genre as you always have been, or have you ever sort of been considering bringing other things into it? Because you seem like a very country music purist in a good way.
Yeah. No, I think if anything, I'm deeper into it, and I have outside influences. You
sure.
Know,
yeah.
Like every kid, like we're probably around the same age, and it's like, you know, growing up in the suburbs, I grew up in Southern Ontario. It's like, I was an angry kid that liked harder edge music in the 90s, and I still love like the skate punk California NoFX Pennywise Bad Religion. Like I listen to those bands a lot, and that's kind of my outside of country music listening kind of leans there. But the country music thing, I think I've gone deep, but it seems like I can just keep going deeper and keep finding these little rabbit holes, and I think I'll continue to make country music and country music records, but they might shift in style. You know,
sure. Like
the band was a heavily guitar driven Bakersfield West Coast country sounding band for so many years, and now there's almost no electric guitar. It's like, this is what we're doing now. This is our trip. And then what will it be next? You know, like I've been a fan of Steve Earle since I was like 5 years old.
Oh yeah, me too. Yeah.
And sometimes I'm like, man, I just want to go back to playing guitar, to beating up an acoustic guitar and you know, singing country rock songs like Steve Earle. Like maybe we'll do that sometime, you know? So I have all these things that I'm interested in, but it all is sort of under the banner of country music. And that's what I listen to, you know, almost exclusively. I have to try to put on other things for my wife and kid. They don't always want to hear it, but they're pretty good about it. But
yeah, you know. I'm sure they hear enough of it being around you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that like maybe the reason that country music seems like such an endless well of content is because it's like a lot of genres, I guess, but it's become so international now, right? I mean, there's mm-hmm. not just people in the southern U.S. doing it, or you know, North America. I mean, there's stuff everywhere that you could probably go to Sweden and find some amazing country music, or like somewhere in Africa. And it's something about it seems to have transcended borders and anything else. And what do you think that is? I don't know if we've talked about this before, but I feel like one of the things, just to, for some context, I mean, I'm a similar nerdy to you. In terms of reggae music, like I have very specific labels and eras and producers and things that I go and seek out 45s of and everything. And a lot of people who are in some of these Jamaican niches that I'm really into are heavily influenced by country. You don't necessarily hear it, but you read interviews with them and then it suddenly kind of like, that makes complete sense. I get how this genre that seemingly completely different sonically works sort of in this context of a completely different style. So like, I don't know, what do you think is the staying power, I guess, across all of these different parts of the world that makes this work? Is it just the stories?
Yeah, it's the simple language, it's the relatable stories, it's the feeling of, you know, not always joyful. It's a feeling of sadness, it's a feeling of real raw human emotion. And what we forget, I think, is, you know, the commercialization of country music, pop country, commercial country music is huge. The biggest stars, they play in stadiums,
like
one or two nights a week in a stadium selling 120, 30,000 tickets. But country music was huge. Like country music was massive in the 60s and the 70s, like had a real place. And radio wasn't so specific. You'd hear Buck Owens and the Beatles and Motown all in succession, you know, and it was a part of the culture. And country music in the Caribbean is still there.
Yeah, like it's crazy. Yeah,
it is right. I know, like it's traveled. It travels because I think it sounds simple. It sounds like something that, you know, you could play with your friends around the fire or in your basement in the kitchen and tell the stories or, you know, insert your own sort of life experience in a different way. But I mean, I don't know if you want to get deep, like it's all like folk music to me, like hip hop music and country music, you know,
well, punk rock, three chords.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's all. Yeah. Yeah. And it's, yeah. And it's traveled. I mean,
do you think that the fact that it has traveled like that, do you think that sort of takes away from maybe the need for some people to pretend to be authentic? Because I feel like it's one of those things where you can hear a country artist that maybe is not from a traditional region where country is played, and they're really doing an affected accent and really like leaning hard on these tropes that are sort of like the major stereotypes of country music. But I feel like maybe we're at a point now where you don't have to do that, or that's not expected of you as a country artist.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's still a discerning audience, especially the country singer and the country musician, like the ones that are serious about it. I think you're not going to get away with that, like the fake accent thing, or like, you know, like there is a lot of people, myself included, that do this. I didn't grow up in the country. Like, yeah, I don't know how to, like, I don't understand actual hard work, you know, and that kind of struggle.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't want to get on a horse, you know, but I love the music, and there's some people, you know, that have parlayed their rodeo careers into singing careers, and good for them. You can't rodeo forever. And, you know, so they might get a pass, you know, if their music isn't as good or their, you know, the accent's a little fake. I don't know, but I don't think you can bullshit real, true, not even purists, but even, you know, purist adjacent.
Yeah,
real
yeah.
country fans, you know, real country fans. And I mean, the ones that you are fooling are, you know, it's commercial radio. That's a whole different thing.
Yeah, for sure. And the people who just kind of have it as background music and are listening, but not really listening, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
I mean, it's industry. It's always been a polarizing genre, and it's always been about making money, you know, like, but the people that were doing it because they loved it, you know,
yeah.
especially in those early days. And I think there's still a lot of people that are like that.
I hope so. I mean, you hope with any genre of music, right? That's the motivator. Yeah.
There's always someone trying to cash in on something, on a fad or something that they think, you know, I'm going to go country. I'm going to make, you know, a folk album or whatever it is, or, you know, it's like, or, you know, synth, you know, whatever. It's like trying to cash in on something and it doesn't last. And listeners, whether they know it or not, I think they can sense a lack of substance.
Yeah. For sure. And I think that this is a genre where substance is at a premium, right? Like, you want something substantial from country music. Otherwise, it's just going to sound thin and again, leaning on those tropes.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can still, like, explore the classic themes and tropes. And if you do them right and you do it, you know, sincerely, it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
While the jukebox and the ballroom blast my best song, just bathing in the warmth of the red wine, and the shuffling of the boot heels they surround me, it takes me back to a place in time. 2 years and long ago, when hard times only showed and occupied each step of my mind. Well, you know that we are never going to dance deep. Still, I know that I'll feel better off in time. The clock ticks by and I'll fly high without you. 'Cause your memory left no misery in my mind. And waltzing to the band, or a two-step hand in hand, are souvenirs I'll never have to show. Chasing my own shadow, but I know that I'll feel better off in time. Still, you know that I'll be better off in time. So
what for people who have heard you before and are familiar with your past records or have been following your career, what can they expect from this new album that's maybe different, that maybe how has the sound evolved? I know you mentioned earlier sort of the less reliance on electric guitars. Just sonically though, what are some of the major differences between this and maybe some of your previous records?
Well, there's a lot of fiddle, and I've had fiddle on one song, I think, in my career on a record. And there's, you know, on a lot of these songs, there's two fiddle players playing twin fiddle parts, like real classic Texas country music stuff. So the fiddle is a huge introduction into the band and has really changed everything. And the steel guitar taking more of a role, that, you know, from the electric guitar. And I think It's probably the most mature sounding record I've made. You know, like as far as musically, it's in the performances, the vocals, the discipline of the band. It's the most mature sounding record. I just want to make some nice country music. It's all I wanted to do. I spent so many years like just beating people up on records and especially live. Like, come in, we're going to do this high energy show. We're going to beat the heck out of you. And at some point I was like, I just don't want to do that anymore. And
right.
And it occurred to me that like we had beat people up so much that some people didn't want to come see us. It's too much. It was like too much, you know? To be able to do that when necessary is still a good thing, and we still can, and we still will, but it's like, here's some nice country music for you to listen to, and hopefully you'll dance, you know? And it's just, the record is 29 minutes. It's 10 songs. It's under 30 minutes. It's like a lot of my favorite country records are like that. You could put it on. It's pleasant, you know, whether it's in the background or whether you're really paying attention. And I hate to say this one because I think everyone says it, but I do think it's the best thing I've ever done.
Well, like, I hope so, though, right? You know? I mean, I know everyone does say that, but if it's not, if you're not thinking that, I think it's a problem, right? I mean, you should constantly be thinking the next thing you did is the best thing you've done. I mean, because one would hope that you know, the trajectory is that you're going to improve over the years of doing this.
Yeah, and I mean, sometimes you might take a stab at it, and it might not quite get to where you needed it to be. But there's something to take home from it that's positive or that's memorable. But for this, I just feel like it's the most cohesive. It's the most accurate reflection and representation of what people see live from our band.
Okay,
you know, they're all there. Everyone's on the record, pretty much is on the shows, and this is what the band sounds like. And we worked all this stuff out together. It wasn't like me and a producer or me and a guitar player worked it all out and sort of showed everyone and did it. Like we had two weekly gigs for a month before we did the sessions. We would play the songs multiple times in a night. People would come and see us and I'd say, this is not a show. Like we're running songs. We played a couple of them back to back and call each other out and change tempos. And we really worked on the stuff. And I think that really shows when you listen to the record. It's everyone understands the assignment. I know I've said that a few times, but that's a huge part of country music when you have that many people on stage too.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, okay, everyone's got to know.
So with that being said, I mean, like, obviously this being the best record you think that you've made, this is what you want people to hear when they're checking out your music. But is there this record aside, is there an entry point into your catalog? Cause you have a lot of different stuff. I mean, you know, as we've kind of established, you try different things, but it's all sort of within the same umbrella of your sound. Like, where would you recommend, new one aside, someone sort of jump into your back catalog?
The first record I made while living in Winnipeg came out in 2018. It's called Music for Taverns, Bars, and Honky Tonks. And there's a few songs on there that are like still staples, that are people's favorites, that people know the words to, that we have to play. You know, they kind of feel the pressure to play them. And that's the entry point for me. I had recorded some stuff prior to living here. It's pretty hard to hear some of it for me. Even the stuff that's like, that's a pretty good song, but doesn't, it's not quite there. This is sort of the beginning of me sort of finding, sort of tapping into whatever potential was there and having the Winnipeg people with me on that record. And it's a real Winnipeg barroom record. It's exactly as advertised. There's country songs and there's kind of more country rock and songs, some blues stuff, like blues ish, you know, country blues. And so that's the good entry point, I'd say. And the trucking record is, you know, sort of an extension of that. And the last record I made, which was called Lost Country.
Yes.
That sort of bridges the gap, I think, between now and the Taverns record. Like it's just a progression. It's, you know, slightly less aggressive, and that one still has an edge that this one doesn't quite have.
Okay.
Because it's a bit of a growth happening. At least I think, and I hope, you know.
What has the response been to these songs? I mean, you've obviously, you know, you have some videos out, you played them live, gearing up to the release of this. What's the audience response been?
It's been good. Like, we've played them the last couple of months and the few times we've played, and we played them all a lot before we recorded them. And so some of the people that would come and see us regularly already sort of have favorites on the record that they haven't heard the studio version of yet. So So that's really positive. You know, they'll come and say, can you play this one or play that one? And then any solo gig I've done in the last couple months, people have asked me about the singles. So that's good. It seems like it's, you know, sort of resonating with people, and people are on this journey with us and they understand. I've made it clear that this is the direction of the band. I've talked about it on Boots and Saddle. I've talked about it off stage. So people kind of know what they're in for, but it seems real positive. And I guess the real tell will be the next couple months on the road.
So for people hearing this, the time this comes out, I mean, hopefully I get the timing right and don't screw it up and this mm-hmm. comes out before the album release. This happened with a recent episode. I was like 2 days late and I realized after the fact. So we're hoping you're hearing this and the record's imminent.
Yeah.
But I mean, if someone hears this 2 years from now, 10 years from now, whatever, what is the best way to track you down and find out what you're doing musically? I mean, I know you're, like you've said, you're in this Corblund things happening. You've been doing it for a number of years. You're probably mm-hmm. been doing that for a while longer, I imagine. Your own stuff, as far as shows, as far as releases, what's the best way to check out what you're up to?
SeanBurns.ca is the official website. That's, you know, fairly well maintained. And it's at Sean Burns Music on the socials. They know, of course, you know, everyone's, you know, on those every day. Those are the spots, and they're pretty well maintained and updated. And I try to keep people informed. It's so hard, man. It's like you never know what people see when you're posting stuff. As I'm sure you know, it's like you just got to do it all the time. People are asking, how do I do this? I'm like, I don't know. You just got to do it all the time. And, you know, hope someone sees it and hope that they come to the show. Like I don't understand it. I wish I did.
Yeah. It's a whole other universe unto itself for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are the release details? I mean, if someone is hearing this, don't screw up the timing and it comes out before the album release. So where do they find it sort of on release day?
The release day is Friday, September 18th, 2026. And we are playing in Winnipeg that night at Side Stage. Erica Fowler, she's opening the whole tour. She's coming on the road with us. She's from Winnipeg. She's going to open the show. And our friend from Lethbridge, Skinny Dick, he's coming out to also do an opening set. He produced the record.
Cool.
So I thought, you know, it'd be good if he could come out and do it. We're doing it Side Stage. The significant percentage of our audience is, you know, older adults. So there will be some seats, there will be seating, and there will be standing for people that want to stand and, you know, at the bar or whatever. And we'll be on the road for about 8 or 9 days leading up to that, playing some shows in Alberta and Saskatchewan, and people will be able to get the record, off stage ahead of the release. But yeah, the release date and the hometown show, September 18th.
And then after that, I guess it's available wherever people...
Available wherever you get music. And then I will do like a full inventory sweep after I'm off there. I'm going to go do a 2-week solo tour right after the band tour. And then I'll come back and everything will be at seanburns.bandcamp.com. At the Bandcamp store will be where whatever's left from the tour, vinyl, CDs, hoodies, t-shirts, all that stuff. I'll sell all that stuff online. And then on stage, we'll be playing around in the wintertime too, November, December. We'll be local.
Awesome.
From the state, friends who could relate, I was needing of some glory over me. I bore my family's name, I can't help but bring us shame. There's nothing but red lights up ahead for me. I never questioned your rules, stood in a long, long line of fools. Still there has to be some glory there for me. Is everything I've wished for right behind this little glass? Is it a lack of courage or opportunities that I've passed? I can't help my expectation, I won't settle till I'm beat. There just has to be some glory out there for me.